This is the Radio Hall of Fame. The Radio Hall of Fame is presented during the full hour ahead by Philco Corporation, makers today of electronic battle equipment for the fighting forces of the United Nations, makers tomorrow of equipment for good living in a free world united by victory. Cooperating with Philco are the editors and correspondents of Variety, who report for the Philco program all the news of all show business the world over every week. This week, the editors of Variety recommend for your pleasure, and Philco delights to honor in your name,
from the phonograph recording studios and motion pictures, Helen O'Connell.
From radio and the Broadway musical comedy stage, Jerry Lester.
From the London Music Hall and the Ziegfeld Follies, Sue Ryan.
Conducting the Philco Hall of Fame Orchestra and Chorus, Paul Whiteman.
Our master of ceremonies, the distinguished composer, author, and commentator, Deems Taylor.
Good afternoon. This is Deems Taylor speaking for Philco. Our target for today is what it has been in other weeks, to present the best in all branches of the audible entertainments, according to the considered opinion of the editors and correspondents of Variety, the theatrical weekly and counselor to the Radio Hall of Fame. And having established our target for the benefit of newcomers to our hall, we had hits from some of the better acts in show business, commencing at once with one of Paul Whiteman's cameo overtures. Maestro Paolo subjects his baton to the usual fate of baton. He raises it. And the Philco Hall of Fame Orchestra and Chorus respond to the Whiteman wand with, meaning no offense, the Donkey Serenade.
Can say it be. Chiquita, you're the one for me.
Faintly bewildering vocabulary of variety, bop means, well, a hit, a sock, a click. In Webster's rather more conservative thesaurus, buffoon means a funny man, a comic, jester, a yuck. Hence, bop buffoon, for a clown who makes the turnstiles whirl like windmills. And such a funny fellow is Jerry Lester, who clowned with Bing Crosby for one solid year and then had a merry time on the networks in his own show. A graduate cum laude of the musical comedy stage, Jerry has returned to his alma mater to be the comedy star of the current Broadway musical, Jackpot. Variety has it that Jerry is definitely here to stay. And the Radio Hall of Fame, concurring therewith, is happy to welcome Lester the Jester. And so enter with cap and bells, Jerry Lester.
Oh, thanks. Gee, the Hall of Fame. Ah, boy, I remember as a boy. I don't remember anything as a girl. My ma told me when I was 1 year old that I'd be in the Hall of Fame. Gee, I remember it so distinctly. She said it one night as she tucked me into the sink. She said, Drizzlepuss. She always used to call me Drizz. She says, don't you think someday you'll be in the Hall of Fame? I didn't answer. Again, she asked me, son, why don't you answer me? And I said, Ma, how can I? I'm too young to talk yet. She said, my bright little man, I can see you in the Hall of Fame at the age of 6. So here I am, folks, beat it by a year. Merci dot and dozy.
Hey, wait a minute. Jerry.
Yes?
You're beginning to worry me.
Well, what are you worried about, Mr. Taylor?
Well, I'm worried about what you're going to do on the program.
Old man, I don't dig you.
Well, I mean, if you're going to be on the program, you've got to do something.
Well, shall we say a little two-handed pinochle?
No, Jerry. I mean something entertaining to other people.
Oh.
We've always had big stars in our programs. We had Lawrence Melchior.
Melchior? Lawrence Melchior?
Mm-hmm.
Nah, you'll never get anywhere with that name. But you can forget him, Mr. Taylor, because you have just bought the golden voice of 52nd Street. And I might add, at a price.
You mean you really sing?
Sing? Are you laughing? Why, for my first song tonight, I think I'd like
now,
to...
Wait a minute, just a minute, Jerry. You know, Helen O'Connell is our singing star tonight.
Oh, indubitably. You notice how I swung in a dangling infinitive?
Yeah.
With a conjugative adverb, because, predicate nominative. Pronoun, something, I don't...
Just the same, I think you should try something other than singing. For instance, recently we had Brian Ahern on our program.
Oh, well, seek no further. Your search is ended, Mr. Taylor. You are now looking at the glorious lover of stage, screen, and RADI-11O radio. Get a load of this. Ah, Rebecca, your rosy cheeks, your pert little nose, your swan-like neck, your gorgeous hair. No, no, don't hand it to me. She looks at me and says, I love you like a father. I push her ears aside, look into her face and say, yes, our love is divine. And by the way, whatever happened to Father Divine?
Jerry. Jerry, you haven't got the idea.
Oh, I got the idea. I just haven't got the girl.
No. No, what I mean is, this is all very enchanting, but it's poetic value.
Poetry? Well, this is fantastic. Only yesterday I was sitting home picking initials out of hotel towels. When I said to myself, how about a little poem, Jer? Quick as a flash I answered, and I quote, A is for the applesauce she gave me. B is for Bablitsky, ain't it good? C is for the cream I used to shave me. D is for the D in Hollywood at the end. E is for Egyptian, as in mummy. F is for Rahman and F and C. Put them all together, they spell absidef, a word that don't mean nothing to me.
Well,
I thank you.
Yes. Well, that's very charming, but I think it's a little too much like an imitation of...
Imitations?
Well, this is incredible. I can
latch on, Satch. Imitation of two snakes playing ping pong. Thank you, man. Imitation? And this is a guessing one. Waterman, Sanford, Parker, Schaefer. The four ink spots. Thank you. Imitation of a man saying goodbye through a train window.
Goodbye, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, Jerry.
Thank you very much.
Well, Jerry, that was superb, but the big mystery to me.
Mystery? Oh! Like I wrote it myself.
Just lend your pink and shell likes to Creep Lester. Scene one. It is Tuesday. As the curtain goes up, you see a dimly lit room with eight people sitting around. You cannot tell if the people are living or dead because all their heads are missing. Just then the grandfather clock opens and the nurse enters with a little girl. Very little and very girl. It is way past 10 o'clock, so the little girl, who is always polite, makes a little curtsy and stabs the nurse goodnight. Scene two. It is still Tuesday. One of them long ones, you know. A suspicious character enters by the window. He's got freckles on his tongue, and as he tiptoes...
Jerry. How could he get freckles on his tongue?
He was eating Swiss cheese out in the sun. You can drop the net now, Max. Scene three. Enter those two great detectives, Cone and Doyle. They walk into the kitchen and eat a few dozen cookies. Cone looks wisely at Doyle and says, "Old man, these cookies have poison in them. What a joke if someone ate them and they both die laughing." Scene four. The heroine enters. She walks into the dining room and finds the maid. Dead. She runs into the cellar and there's the gardener. Dead. She hurries to the clothes closet and out falls the cook. Dead. That's the last straw. She rushes over to the phone, picks up the receiver, and her face turns white.
What's the matter?
The phone is dead, too. Well, how'd you like it?
Very innovating. For a moment there, I really felt it difficult to compose myself.
Compose? Well, this is positively pause. With your permission and the aid of Mr. Whiteman and his makes you want to leave the dance early music, I should like very much to sing, more or less, my latest composition, which I have dedicated to my girl, Mr. Professor. Ah, gee, but ain't it tough to have a girl so big and fat that when you go to hug her, you don't know where you're at? You have to take a piece of chalk in your hand and hug a ways and chalk a mark to see where you began. Now one day I was a-huggin' and a-chalkin' and a-chuggin' and a-haulin' away when I met another fella with some chalk in his hand coming around the other way.
For us at home, the age of electronics is a promise for the future. For our men at the front, the age of electronics is here today. In their planes, tanks, ships, and weapons, they are using now the miracles of electronic science, which tomorrow will bring thrilling new wonders of comfort, convenience, and entertainment to a world at peace. The scientists and engineers of Philco Corporation have had the privilege of developing and producing some of the most important achievements of Army and Navy scientists in the field of electronics. In these assignments, they were qualified by their years of leadership in radio, their vital contributions to television, and their spectacular progress in refrigeration. So the age of electronics has come for the men and women of Philco, too. In their laboratories and production lines, they see the evidence of untold progress in electronic research. And as they work for victory, they see the promise of peace. When Philco leadership will bring to your home the newest achievements of modern science in radio, television, refrigeration, and air conditioning.
Our private bureau of facts and figures comes up with an arresting calculation, to wit, that if 1,250,000 records of green eyes were placed edge to edge, they would stretch almost 200 miles. In other words, the distance between your hometown and wherever you'd rather go. The point is that our next guest, Helen O'Connell, has made that 200 miles worth of records of green eyes. Moreover, altogether, she's made 5 million phonograph records. Now that, says Variety, is a lot of black chips and more than an admission fee to the Radio Hall of Fame. And so we present forthwith and without further facts or figures, Miss Helen O'Connell and Green Eyes.
Life held no charm, dear, until I met you. Love always seemed oh so far away. Your eyes met mine, now I can't forget you. Dark nights become as bright as the day. Soft lights and eyes upon a sweet night bring to my soul a longing, a thirst for love divine. In dreams I seem to hold you, to find you and enfold you. Our lips meet and our hearts too, with a thrill so sublime. Those cool and lucid green eyes, a pool wherein my love lies, so deep that in my searching for happiness I fear that they will ever haunt me. But will they ever want me? Green eyes, I love you.
Out of the face of a peasant girl of Lourdes, the novelist Franz Werfel distilled an inspiring story and called it The Song of Bernadette. Hollywood took that story in sympathetic hands, and slowly there emerged from the sound stages a motion picture that many call a masterpiece. In it, a newcomer gives an unforgettable performance as the peasant girl of Lourdes whose faith wrought miracles. The newcomer is Jennifer Jones, who in her first screen appearance became a contender for the Academy Award. At this moment, on stage one of the 20th Century Fox Studios in Hollywood, Miss Jones, with Charles Bickford and a distinguished cast, stand ready to enact a radio version of The Song of Bernadette. The orchestra and chorus are directed by Alfred Newman, who composed the score for the picture. Jennifer Jones appears through the courtesy of David O. Selznick. Variety recommends and Philco delights in honoring not only a great story, but the understanding and sympathy and the meeting of the many minds that have at length brought it to us. And now, from the Hollywood stage of the Radio Hall of Fame, The Song of Bernadette.
Son of Maria, of
this is the story of Bernadette. For those who believe in God, no explanation is necessary. For those who do not believe in God, no explanation is possible. The story of Bernadette Soubirous begins in the little French town of Lourdes on a winter afternoon in 1858. The Soubirous, a very poor family, live in a cold, damp hovel that has left its effect on Bernadette's health. But this afternoon, she is begged to go with her sister Marie and another girl to gather wood near Marsabielle, the city dumping ground. Now her mother returns, and worried that Bernadette is not yet home, turns to her husband, Soubirous.
Soubirous, the girl's home yet?
Not yet. Louise, Madame Millet's coachman, was here. Said there wouldn't be any washing for you to do this week.
No washing. Where then is the food going to come from?
Don't ask me.
Here we are, Maman. We're back.
Bernadette, where have you been? I've been worried to death.
Oh, but Maman, we got wood. Look, enough for days.
There's another bundle outside that Jean was carrying.
I'll get it, Mary.
She'll be coughing all night running like that.
She ran all the way home, Maman. We couldn't even keep up with her.
What's happened to her, Marie?
Bernadette's all excited because she says she saw a lady at Marsabielle all dressed in white with golden roses on her feet.
What on earth are you talking about?
That's what she told us. She said the lady was standing on a rock and smiled at her and had a rosary of pearls with a gold crucifix.
Sorry. You told on me. And you said you wouldn't.
Maman asked me.
Bernadette, what's this foolishness she tells me?
It's true, Maman. In the cave at Marsabielle, I saw a most beautiful lady.
Lady? What lady?
I don't know. Suddenly she was there. And then suddenly she disappeared.
Nonsense.
Oh, no, Maman. There was no mistake. She was there. Her face was so lovely. So beautiful. Just to look at her made me feel...
Soubirous, you hear what she says?
I heard. And I know why she says it, too. She's showing off, makes up a story to feel important. Always starts the same way with fairy tales. Golden roses on her feet, indeed.
But, Papa, I really and truly saw the lady. Truly I did.
And truly I've had enough of this silliness. I warn you, I wish to hear no more about it.
Mary, speak.
She's dead or something.
What?
After church, we went to Marsabielle, and she said she saw that lady again. And then she got all white and sick looking.
Where is she?
They carried her to Madame Nicolas.
Rosary and stayed kneeling a long, long time.
Then she got pale looking and fell over.
Please, please leave her in peace. The girl is sick. Rub her wrists, Antoine.
She'll be all right, Mother. She's opening her eyes. Mademoiselle Bernadette, do you feel better now?
Yes, thank you, Monsieur.
What was the matter, Mademoiselle? What happened?
The lady was there a long time. And she spoke to me.
She spoke to you? What did she say?
She said, "Will you render me the grace of coming here each day for 15 days? And then she said, "I cannot promise to make you happy in this world, only in the next."
Oh, Bernadette.
My darling, are you all right?
Yes, Maman, I'm all right. There's nothing to worry about.
Nothing to worry about. Scare me half to death. And you say nothing to worry about. Sitting there like a princess on a throne. You're good for nothing.
No, no. Don't strike the child. She's an angel of God.
Angel? She's the laughingstock of Lourdes. But I have a ready cure for that. Bernadette, you promised me never to go to Marsabielle again. Never.
But, Maman, I can't promise that. The lady asked me to return every day for 15 days.
The lady asked you? It doesn't matter what
promise I... Promise your mother, Bernadette. promise. Such excitement is bad for you, child. You're sure to be sick from it.
Very well. I promise you, Mamma, never to go to Masabielle again. Unless you yourself give me permission.
And that I can promise you, you will never get.
Mamma, Bernadette is crying. She's crying so hard, the whole pillow is wet.
What is it, Bernadette? What's the matter, my lad?
Come to Mother. Come, we'll sit by the fire.
Oh, Mamma. The lady was so beautiful. Just to think of
there, her. There, there.
Girls of your age often see things that don't exist. But it passes. Just put it out of your mind. You're a big girl now. Soon you'll be a woman. You meet a man, have children, just as I did. Life goes fast, my child. It's hard to believe how fast.
Mamma, if I can't go back to the lady again.
Shh. We'll see. We'll see, my child.
The mother makes her decision. Let those who will laugh. Bernadette will see her lady again, and she will go with her. And so they go to Marsabielle, each with a lighted taper in her hand. And as they go, the whispers follow them.
The Subaru girl, they say she has visions.
Each day they make their quiet pilgrimage. Each day the whispers grow, and soon they do not walk alone.
Come along, we go to Marsabielle.
With lighted candles as to church.
A lady, she says.
A beautiful lady.
Each day the crowds increase. A fever seems to hold the town, and soon the officials must take note of it. Jacquemet, commissioner of police.
Outrageous, scandalous, and not a law in the books by which I can stop it.
Dutour, the imperial prosecutor.
To think that this could happen in the 19th century.
His honor the mayor, Monsieur Lacarde.
Processions, candles, the whole town hysterical because an imbecile girl thinks she's had a vision. I tell you, gentlemen, all France will be laughing at us.
Your honor, I should think this falls within the province of the church. Why not consult the clergy?
I have, Dutour. I spoke to Father Peyramale. I might have saved my breath for all the good it did. He said the church attributes no religious significance to the so-called visions of Marsabielle.
And so dump the whole matter back into your lap.
Not in my lap, gentlemen. In yours. Jacquemet, you are commissioner of police.
Quite right, monsieur. And I know a few things about applying pressure. If you will let me have 5 minutes with this girl, I promise she'll never go near the grotto again. What's your name?
But you know my name, Monsieur Jacquemet.
What's your name?
Subiru Bernadette.
I want you to know that I will write down everything you say, so be very careful. Now, about this lady you claim to see. You know who she is?
No, monsieur, I don't.
What does she wear?
A white veil with a blue girdle, and there's a rose on each foot.
She stands quite still, like a statue in the church.
Oh, no, she's ever so natural. She moves about and talks to me. She greets the people and even laughs.
Do your parents believe this story of yours?
No, monsieur. I don't think they do.
And yet you expect me to believe when your own parents don't? If your lady were real, wouldn't other people see her too?
I don't see why they can't. She's there.
Oh, you can't, eh? You'll admit you're very ignorant, the worst pupil in the whole school.
That is true, monsieur. I'm very stupid.
Then you should take heed when intelligent people assure you that this lady is only a childish bit of imagination, an absurd dream.
Monsieur, once you can mistake a dream for something real, but not 6 times.
Well, pay attention now. I'll read your answers back to you so you can confirm them.
Yes, monsieur.
Bernadette Subaru declares that the lady wears a blue veil and a white girdle.
No, a white veil and a blue girdle.
You're contradicting yourself. You said a white girdle.
You must have made a mistake in writing it down, monsieur.
Bernadette Subaru declares that the lady resembles the statue of the Blessed Virgin in the parish church.
No, the lady has nothing to do with the Blessed Virgin in the church.
That's enough. Only a complete confession can save you now. Tell me the names of all the persons in league with you, and don't try to lie, because I know every one of them.
I don't understand what you're saying, monsieur.
Certain people put you up to circulating this story. I want you to tell me who they are.
But in spite of the warning, Bernadette goes again to Marsabielle, and now she has a host of followers. Dotting the hillside, they stand, silent and respectful, while she kneels and lifts adoring eyes to the beautiful lady whom she alone can see. It is a long time before she rises to her feet again and turns to those who wait. And when she sees the question in their eyes, she smiles quite simply, and she says,
"The lady spoke to me. She gave me a message for the priest."
The priest. That would be Father Pyramel, the Dean of Lourdes, who rules his parish with an iron hand. A stern, unyielding man, whose gruffness hides a love for all things that are pure and good. A very giant of a man, whose temper, as his people know, quite fits his size. Here in the garden of the rectory, he takes his daily walk. Lost in his own thoughts, he does not notice the timid little girl who speaks to him.
Excuse me, Your Reverence. Your Reverence.
What do you want? Who are you?
I am Bernadette Soubirous.
Oh, so you're the urchin that every idiot in France is talking about. Who are those people at my garden gate? Do your courtiers and servants always follow you? Well, speak. What do you want of me?
The lady told me.
What do you mean? What lady?
The lady of Massapierre.
Don't know her.
She's a beautiful lady who always comes to me.
Is she from Lourdes?
No, Your Reverence.
Have you asked her her name?
Oh, yes, but she gives no answer.
Perhaps the lady is deaf and dumb.
Oh, no, she speaks to me.
What does she say?
Just now the lady said, "Please go to the priest and tell them that a chapel is to be built here."
Priests? What does that mean? The very cannibals have priests. We Catholics have religious, each bearing a specific title.
But the lady did say priests.
Well, have you any money with which to build a chapel?
Oh, no, I have no money at all.
Then go and tell your lady. If she wants a chapel, she'll have to provide the money.
Yes, Your Reverence, I'll tell her that.
And you can also tell her that the Dean of Lourdes doesn't consider it very fitting for a lady to climb barefoot on rocks and send gibbering adolescents with messages. And what's more, he wants the lady once and for all to leave him in peace. Do you understand?
Oh, yes. I'll tell her everything.
Very good. And you won't have to bother me any further. Visions. Messages. As though the Holy Mother herself had... Come in.
I forgot something, Your Reverence.
Yes?
The lady also said, "Let processions come hither."
Processions, eh? Do you think tomorrow would be soon enough for your lady?
Oh, yes, I'm sure she would be delighted. And now that I've given you the messages,
One moment. I'll decide when you're to go.
Yes, Your Reverence.
You find your lady quite extraordinary, don't you?
Oh, yes, Your Reverence.
And perhaps you'll give her a message for me. And we'll find out how extraordinary she is. I have heard that there's a wild rose bush growing in the grotto. Is that true?
Oh, yes. Right under the niche where the lady always stands.
Splendid. I want you to tell the lady this. The Dean of Lourdes would like her to perform a little miracle. Would like her to make the wild rose bush bloom. Now. This last week in February. You understand?
Yes, Your Reverence.
Then repeat what I said.
The Dean of Lourdes would like the lady to perform a little miracle. To make the wild rose bush bloom now. This last week in February. Is that correct?
Yes.
I'll tell the lady immediately. Good day, Your Reverence.
And so once again, she goes to Marsabielle and kneels in simple faith before the grotto wall. But now the word is spread. From every street in Lourdes they come. The pious.
A miracle. A miracle.
And the skeptical.
Maybe I'll take my wife a dozen roses.
Close packed, they stand upon the hill. Those who have come in reverence with those who have come to mock and jeer. Antoine is here, too, standing with half-blind old Bourriette.
Anything yet, Antoine? See anything?
Not yet.
It's no use, I tell you. The bush will not bloom.
Be quiet.
They stand and watch, and all eyes are on the girl. And now a murmur like a sudden breeze runs through the crowd.
What's happening? Tell me, Antoine.
I don't see very well.
She's getting up. She's walking to the rose bush now.
Slowly. Straight to the niche she walks. A strange and luminous glow upon her face. She lifts her eyes adoringly. Then suddenly, in passionate devotion, thrusts her face into the bush, unmindful of the thorns that rip and tear her skin. The crowd is puzzled, wondering, but quiets quickly as the girl seems to be listening to something. To something they cannot hear. She lifts her eyes again, as if in inquiry, and then half to herself.
The spring.
She listens intently for another moment, and then again.
To the spring. Eat of the plants. Wash myself.
She turns, walks quickly to the grotto's edge, falls to her knees, and pulls a handful of the weeds that grow among the rocks. She puts the greens into her mouth and tries to eat them, and a murmured horror runs through the crowd. And the girl gazes again toward the grotto, and her lips form the words, "The spring, wash in the spring." And now she's clawing wildly at the ground, scratching and digging frantically with her hands. And as she finds the softer soil below, she smears it on her face and arms, making herself grotesque and hideous. Now, somewhere in the crowd, a woman laughs, and others join. And as their voices lift derisively, Bernadette's mother hurries to her side.
Come, my child. We'll go home.
No. No, I must wash myself in the spring. The lady has asked me to.
There is no spring here, my darling. Come now.
There is. There is. The lady said so. The lady said there was a spring.
No laughter now. The crowd is shamed to silence, both for the girl and for themselves. And as they stand there wondering what to do, Jacques Amet, commissioner of police, steps forward, holds up his hands.
Citizens! Citizens, hear me! At last you've seen with your own eyes what we officials have known all along. That this story of the Blessed Virgin was born in a sick and warped mind. You've been duped by an idiot. I beg of you, go back to your homes and never return here again.
I told you not to hope too much, Antoine. I knew the rosebush would not bloom. You must learn to expect nothing from God. And when you get nothing, you will not be disappointed.
Be quiet.
They tell us the Blessed Virgin is loving and good. Huh. Was she good to that girl just now?
He talks, but Antoine scarcely hears. Lost in his misery, the young man does not realize that he has lifted his hand and is wiping it absently on his trouser leg. He leans back again, his hand on the ground. Then slowly becomes aware of a strange sensation. He looks down at his hand, lifts it, stares at it, looks down at the ground, and then in great excitement...
Boyette! Look, Boyette!
What is it?
Water! It's water, Boyette!
Water? From where?
Here, under my hand, a little pool! See, it's trickling along through the rocks! A little stream! It's coming from the grotto!
A stream! A miracle!
Yes, the first of the lady's miracles had been performed. And for Bernadette, a new life was to begin. This was but the prologue.
Philco Radio Hall of Fame pauses between Act 1, concluded, and Act 2, coming up almost at once, for Mr. Glenn Riggs to make his usual careful distinction.
This is the Blue Network.
The mountains, the plains, the rivers, and the bayous of America have all yielded Native American music. The Delta, the levee, and the cotton fields have yielded their share of song, too, the Negro spiritual. Paul Whiteman selects one of the oldest of these spirituals, weaving new patterns from the simple old song, Ezekiel Saw the Wheel, featuring the Paul Whiteman chorus and orchestra. It's a bit as though we were to refer to some English balladeer as the English Bing Crosby. That's how extensive a compliment is paid toward Miss Sue Ryan of the current Ziegfeld Follies when the British call her the American Gracie Fields. In Old Albion, that's Sterling, Sheffield, the cream, the final word, the tops. Sue was the girl who went to England for a 6-week engagement and had to remain for 2.5 years or else shoulder the blame for an international incident. All of which would seem to indicate that this lass who combines English music hall technique with American jive is exceedingly good. In further testimony whereof, Variety recommends in the Philco Hall of Fame is happy to present Sue Ryan herself. Miss Ryan opens shop with Fanny the Foreman.
If I look a little weary, and my eyes are kind of bleary, it's just because I'm helping win the fight. If I walk a little knock-kneed, it's because I work all day at Lockheed. Then I'm working in the air raid corps all night. But when I think of how I do my part, I get a feeling in my heart, like Joan of Arc. Or was it Josephine? When I'm sitting at my bench with my trusty monkey wrench, I get that feeling. You know what I mean. I'm Fanny, the foreman of the factory. I fix anything, whatever shape it's in. Tractors, derricks, shovels, trucks, machinery worth $1 million. And so help me, all I ever use is just a bobby pin. The stuff we make is just as secret as can be. It's so secret, no one knows just what is what. I don't know, and you don't know, and he don't know, and they don't know. And the only guy who knows just lost his job because he forgot. I take it and make it, I whack it and smack it, I whang and I bang it, I tack and shellack it, I crate it and freight it, it goes on the track. I rush it right out, they rush it right back. The drillers are missing, the flyers are lost. I finish the job, no matter what cost. It's inspected by admirals, generals too. I'm given a medal, a ribbon, a blue. They claim I'm a genius, sensational, great. I riveted a rudder with my upper plate. Overtime, overtime, time and a half. What good is time and a half when half of the time you ain't got time to spend the time and a half? Half of the time. Gee, Blanche, you should have been with me last night. Oh, boy, did I meet a swell sailor. He took me to the Navy Yard for inspection. No, the Navy Yard, not me. You know, we had quite an uplifting conversation. There we were on the boat, and he says to me, he says... And I says to him, I says, and then he says, and then I says, what, Blanche? What happened? Well, do you know what I can do with a brand new PT boat? Oh, but he was so good looking. Outside of him having four chins, but they didn't show much. His lower lip covered them. Oh, boy, I'm having more trouble with these plane parts today. No matter how I put them together, it comes out a submarine. And imagine that foreman getting mad just because I put the rivets in the wings so they spell out Brian 56188. It's a candy store, but they'll call me. Hey, Blanche, do you remember my Aunt Tilly? You know, the one who worked for Kaiser? The fat one? Well, she had a terrible accident. She bent over to pick up a hammer, and somebody hit her with a bottle of champagne. They launched her. If you could see the work we do, say it would chill your spine. You'll find me every morning at the old assembly line. Way down the line, a mile away, we're ready to begin. And all we have to start with is a little hunk of tin. The tin keeps moving from bench to bench. They give it the hammer, they give it the wrench. Rolls along the moving tape. Now the thing is taking shape. You gotta be quick, you gotta be fast, 'cause now the thing is flying past. Whistles are blowing, the hammers are going, the derricks are towing, the power is flowing. Start in the morning, it's finished by noon. Just what we need, a spittoon. I get so doggone tired, I can hardly see. I put the propeller where the cockpit ought to be. By the time they ring the quitting bell, my fuselage is shut to, well, I'm Fanny, the foreman of the fanfare.
You've heard of it often recently, the bazooka. The soldier's pet name for an amazing rocket gun that's as easy to carry as a rifle and can shatter the heaviest enemy tank like a howitzer. And thus another stirring chapter of the story of Philco at war is revealed. This time it's the Philco Metal Division, whose huge presses produce the metal parts of peacetime Philco radios. The bazooka was conceived and developed by the Army Ordnance Department, and the Philco Metal Division played a leading part in the final perfection and production of its deadly rocket projectile. This is one more example of how the diversified Philco research, engineering, and production facilities are serving almost every branch of the Army and Navy. With their colleagues in the Philco Radio and Storage Battery Divisions, these men and women are turning out miracles of war equipment. It is a promise, too, of the future, when their ingenuity will be turned once more to the pursuits of peace. And when you can look to Philco for quality and modern design in radio, television, refrigeration, and air conditioning.
The names of Richard Rogers and Lawrence Hart have been outlined in lights over Broadway ever since the days when electric light bulbs had points on them. And wherever those names went up, there also went up glad noises from people who knew what they liked in popular music. Paul Whiteman, Helen O'Connell, the orchestra and chorus select a Rogers and Hart nosegay and present it herewith to all good people who know what they like in popular music. Thank you.
one note, rang out with gusto, and just overlorded the place. Oh, Johnny one note, yell willy-nilly until he was blue in the face. For holding one note was his haste.
Couldn't hear the brass or the sax's moan. Couldn't hear the flutes or the big trombone.
Sing, Johnny, one note. Sing out with gusto and just overwhelm all the crowd. So sing, Johnny, one note out loud. Sing, Johnny, one note. Sing, Johnny, one note.
Next week, same time, same station, when the Philco Radio Hall of Fame returns with another show of shows. So we'll expect you this time next week at the gates of the Radio Hall of Fame, signed Deems Taylor.
Next week, the Aldrich family, the famous mimic Dean Murphy, Phil Baker of Take It or Leave It, Evelyn Knight, and others. This is Glenn Riggs saying goodbye for Philco dealers and distributors throughout the United States and Canada. And from Philco Corporation, makers today of radio and electronic materials to help win the war. Makers tomorrow of materials for good living in a world at peace. The production and writing staff of the Radio Hall of Fame includes D. Engelbach, producer-director, Milton Geiger, writer, and Abel Green, editor-in-chief of Variety. Today's radio dramatization of the 20th Century Fox picture, The Song of Bernadette, was produced by William A. Beecher. Charles Bickford is under contract to 20th Century Fox. This is the Blue Network.